it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
From autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Bryn Lucas, and you're listening to the Autosport F1 Podcast. It's been a long time coming, but after 5 years and 105 Grand Prix since its last appearance, Formula One returns to the Shanghai International Circuit for the Chinese Grand Prix this weekend. And this year, it comes with a sprint race too. Joining me to preview the race this weekend is Alex Kalanorkis and Philip Clearen. Gentlemen, how are we? Start with you, Alex. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good, thanks, Bryn. Just spent a large chunk of my afternoon deciding which of the budget airlines might get me from northeast London to Barcelona for the Spanish Grand Prix. Not a problem that Barcelona-based Philip Clearen has, but I settled on Ryanair, and I've got a quietly good feeling about that. I think they're doing me all right.
So you're going to fly to Paris and then drive, potentially.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a Barcelona Girona airport, which I'm not flying into, but I just discovered was a thing, and Ryanair do fly there.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. It's quite a long way from the airport to the track, though, isn't it? It's a long old hour's drive or so. Phil, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Actually, a lot of people found that the hard way about the Girona airport. There's one on the other side as well. So a lot of people have been stranded in the middle of nowhere in Catalonia. I've been good. Actually, spent yesterday in the park. Paid the price a little bit for it in terms of hay fever. But it was nice to get a weekend off, and it's proper summertime here now. So that was all good.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. Just take some nice allergy remedies. You'll be absolutely fine. I'm not massively a hay fever sufferer, so I don't feel your pain. And I rejoice every time I step out on a sunny day. Let's go to this Grand Prix then, shall we? Actually, before we do, gents, let's talk about the calendar. I mean, Alex, we were talking about this the other day. The F1 calendar was released for 2025. Some key changes unveiled. Australia is back as the opener. Bahrain and Saudi moved to April to avoid that clash with Ramadan. And there's an extra three-week break in July. So two lovely three-week breaks. I know, Alex, you love the fact there's three triple headers. But what are your thoughts of the main changes, Alex?
Yeah, obviously the headline change, Australia back as a season opener. I'm a big fan of that because I'm a big fan of Melbourne. And also I think sort of more interesting things can happen when you've got the season opener there, as opposed to it being sort of a back-to-back with a Bahrain test. I think that will mean that, assuming testing is in Bahrain again, because as we know, Aramco pays for it, so it becomes a whole big event, that will just be shuffled back a little bit by at least a week or so. So you won't get that back to back that I was talking about. And then the other big takeaway is that for all of what F1's pushing about sustainability, and Phil, I know you've been in calls this afternoon with F1 itself on this very topic, it just doesn't seem brilliant to have the Canadian Grand Prix sticking out like a sore thumb when you've got the nice smooth run of European based races. It just seems very odd. I get why from Montreal's position doesn't want to change. It fears even more wet weather disruption by going earlier on in the year, and then there's other things that the park's used for later on in the year. But that seems very odd. And then there is apparently the risk of it clashing with Le Mans in 2025, which, you know, from F1's point of view, so what? Also a little bit, you know, the sports car world is more niche, and there is, they're not going to go out of their way to clash, sorry, to avoid clashing with each other. But from a fan's point of view, ideally you really would want them on separate weekends. So yeah, you know, it's much of a muchness really in terms of F1. It's a very long calendar. It feels very familiar. But yeah, at the very least, nice to be heading back to Australia for the first race.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, like, you know, a lot of people, I mainly grew up with Australia being the opening race from 1996 onwards. So absolutely, you know, it's emotionally dry thing to do for me. And yeah, it does have a buzz about it, doesn't it? Like starting down under, it's a brilliant event. And it just comes to life a lot more than it does in Bahrain. No disrespect to Bahrain, but it's just not the same thing. And I remember waking up 7 a.m. to see what the new cars would look like for free practice. And it's, you know, it sounds right to me. And in terms of triple headers, I almost caught myself saying, actually, this doesn't look too bad, which maybe says how much we've gotten used to it. So maybe F1 are doing a good job trying to convince us that way. But yeah, as you said, we are going to follow up on with a piece later on this month on autosport.com, just how this calendar comes together. Obviously, it's a very complicated puzzle with lots of moving parts. It's not just about, hey, country A is close to country B, let's just do them back to back and call it the day. It's also about logistics. It's about, you know, it's 24 races, so you're talking about 24 different countries or stakeholders that all have some sort of preference. You've got the climate, there's the sea freight as well, so there's a lot of things involved in it. But yeah, I think it's a small improvement on last year, I think. Still a bit puzzled about the Vegas, Qatar, Abu Dhabi triple header, which we will also have this year. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. Having done Vegas and Abu Dhabi last year, I was completely broken, and a lot of people in the panic were as well. But yeah, we'll see. It's 24 races, never going to be perfect.
Yeah, Phil, maybe it doesn't feel so bad because there's like a weird like double summer break in there where you've got the British Grand Prix, then a massive gap to the next race, and then the summer break kicks right. In. Yeah. It almost feels like F1's somehow caught itself out by not realising there's only been a 3-year gap between the European Football Championships, which are happening this year and not in 2025.
Well, there you go. Wouldn't be the first time, would it, that Formula One have maybe not looked at other things and just focused purely on themselves. But I want to talk about something else, some news that came through. And this was on the back of Liberty Media announcing the purchase of MotoGP. And is there some talk of MotoGP being on the same weekend as Formula One? I know Lewis Hamilton has said that it would be, quote unquote, epic. Alex, what are your thoughts? You wrote an article on it. So what are your thoughts?
I did, yeah. It was, I asked Lewis about that at Suzuka. And he was more of a off-the-cuff Lewis reply. He later on in that press conference got very exasperated by a very boring question about visor tear-offs, which went down a storm in the room, but there we go. I think it's more sort of Lewis just musing, but he's right, you know, it would be quite interesting to see Formula One and MotoGP share an event. I think it's very much talk. Like, I think the Dorner boss has said, you know, it's possible, it's an option. Definitely not in the short term, definitely not on F1 street tracks, but it could happen. And I think that would be interesting, but there's just obviously there's almost more questions and more problems that go with it. So, for example, you could only have it at the biggest of tracks. Let's take, for example, Silverstone, because it's got twin paddocks. You know, you could have F1 in the wing and MotoGP, which I still believe uses the National Pit Straight Complex. But from Silverstone's point of view, why would you want what are potentially your two biggest weekends of the year on the same bill? Why would you want that? You'd be massively harming your own revenue. So yeah, I think that would definitely be an issue. Like, why would the circuits themselves who could host this agree to it? And also, would the fan bases want that? Like, I can certainly see what F1 gains from having MotoGP as a support category, but what on earth does MotoGP and its fan base gain? So yeah, I think it's more pie in the sky chat than something that will necessarily become a thing. But equally, why could you not have one of the lower MotoGP categories racing as a support event the vice versa with the F1 support categories. You know, if it's all one big ecosystem, that might be something. Again, costs would be potentially prohibitive, because why would, you know, small scale MotoGP teams have to absorb the cost of not traveling with the rest of the circus and things like that? But yeah, it's definitely an interesting discussion at the very least.
And can you imagine, couldn't you, Lewis Hamilton jumping out of his F1 car, changing his race suit into a different one and jumping on a bike and going around to have another go on something else? Phil, talking about drivers that have stayed in one form of motorsport or other and, you know, might jump ship one day, you never know. That's Fernando Alonso, and the noise around the circus ended, didn't it, the other day? Well, it didn't end. It actually got louder, but it ended from one point of view of Fernando Alonso ruling himself out of a team change in 2025 with this contract extension, this open-ended, seems to be, contract extension at Aston Martin. What are your thoughts? Are there any signs from Fernando Alonso, or Fernando Alonso perhaps, maybe in the decline stage of his career, or is he still firmly where he was before?
Well, I think if you look at his recent performances, and he'll say the same thing, he'll say he's still very much on top of his game. And I don't think he would have committed for another 2 years if he didn't feel like he still had the hunger and the speed to do it. So, you know, Aston Martin was very much pushing for Alonso to re-sign a new deal. And you know, obviously they have the data as well. They can see how much he's doing in that car. So, yeah, it was not a massive surprise, really. Obviously, if you know there's a Mercedes seat and a Red Bull seat potentially up for grabs, you're going to have a chat. But I think what Fernando really wanted was being with the right team, or what he thinks is right team for 2026. So he wanted a long-term commitment, and he wanted to feel wanted, which is also why I think he switched from Alpine to Aston in the first place, because he felt a longer-term commitment from them. And it's the same here in terms of Mercedes. They are probably going to put Antonelli in the seat as soon as he's ready. So then Alonso would be a stopgap solution, which is not something that he would like to see himself as. And then with Red Bull as well, is Max staying? You know, it's looking more likely perhaps that he will. Does that mean they really want to bring in Fernando as well, when you have a decent wingman now doing a good job in Checo Perez? So maybe that wasn't really the most harmonious choice at all. So I think it's a common sense decision for every party, really. And I also think it speaks well of what Aston are building in having Alonso's faith in that project, with Honda coming on for a new facility, new wind tunnel being built. There's no shortage of ambition there, and Fernando, I think, fits perfectly in that picture.
Yeah, and I guess with his cross-platform racing with World Endurance Championship with the LMPs as well, he's got experience across multiple forms of motorsport that should help the team out. Actually, on that, what are Mercedes going to do? I saw an article on autosport.com the other day from John Noble saying that Toto Wolff's in two minds about what he's going to do in 2025 because of the car and everything like this. So that's a bit of an open-ended one as well. If he's in two minds at this stage, it seems to be that we're going to be watching this one for a fair bit of time, Alex.
Yeah, I think he's in one mind. I think he wants to put Antonelli in the car, but he just, A, doesn't know if that will be possible based on what happens in F2 this year. That's more the main point. I think that whether you put him in a Mercedes that isn't going to be fighting for the title so he can do his learning next year, that's one thing. Or you park him at Williams, which I understand is definitely a potential option from Williams' point of view. So, yeah, I think Wolf knows exactly what he wants to do. It's just whether the situation will develop how he hopes.
Well, let's move on to what we're supposed to be talking about, really, which is the return of the Chinese Grand Prix. It's really exciting to have Shanghai back on the calendar. It's been a long time since we last saw it. First of all, what are we looking to expect from the return to China, Phil?
I think a lot of teams will tell you it's sort of a race into the unknown because of the obvious reasons. We haven't been there for 5 years. So there's no data. There's certainly no relevant data with these sort of more ground effect based cars. There's no data with these Pirelli tires, and they've also resurfaced the track. So that makes your simulations even harder. So the fact that it's our first sprint weekend of the year has raised some eyebrows. I saw Max Verstappen absolutely slammed it in the press conference in Japan last week. And Carlos Sainz as well. Yeah, some serious question marks behind, you know, of all places, why do we do it here when we haven't run here in such a long time? So it'll be fun to watch, maybe. I mean, it's good, right? To have some unknowns. I know the teams hate it, and I can see why, but yeah, it does offer some more question marks than any other weekend would do. So we'll see. I'm pretty excited about it.
On the data front and on the, what the driver's been saying, Alex, there's, as Phil says, Max said it's not the smartest thing, again, quotes unquotes, to hold the sprint at China after a five-year absence, but they've had to do the resurfacing. They've had to grind down some of the surface bumps. That's Herman Tilke's company who have been instructed to do that. They've managed to get that work done, haven't they? So what are you expecting and hoping to see from China and the sprint race and the main Grand Prix?
Yeah, I think Max's point is very much just part of his ongoing and I think brilliant crusade against sprint races. I don't think it's anything in particular other than, oh, here we go, back in China and it's a sprint race. I think it just fits in with what he was always going to say. Oh, yeah, honestly, the day Max Verstappen says something positive about a sprint race will be a very interesting day indeed. But yeah, I think that there's all the capacity. Every sprint race boils down to the same thing. Will the lack of preparation time have any impact on the pecking order? And fundamentally, it doesn't. I'm sure we're going to come on to talk about the merits of sprint races, and I've got a lot to say about that, because honestly, I think it was basically the format they first tried, I thought was fine. Have a grid that sets, you know, sorry, have a race that sets the grid, and then it, basically everything that happened in 2021, the most interesting weekends, Monza 21, Silverstone 21, happened because of what happened the day before in the sprint race, right? You don't have that now. It's even more different with the Parc Fermé changes. So, you know, it always plays out the same way. Fundamentally, unless something dramatic happens, nothing will change to the pecking order. Red Bull is still the favourite. But the track layout and the conditions in Shanghai, in theory, do massively boost Ferrari. So you've got very long corner type, especially in the opening sector, that are going to really test the tyres. It's a front limited circuit, which is, you know, that what basically it's the things that undid Red Bull in Melbourne. Cooler conditions in the low 20s. You've got potential massive fluctuations. Pirelli reckons at times it might even be 10 degrees cooler than that. Could be inclement weather, things like that. Basically, everything is on the cards to have potential front graining. And that's something that we know historically Red Bull has struggled with, and the Ferrari is able to cope with much better because it historically, again, the changes have been made for the car package for this year, means that it doesn't have the problem it does, which is overworking its rear tyres. And in fact, it's more in a sweet spot because of the front tyre limitation at tracks like this. So we'll talk Ferrari up. We'll hope that something interesting happens. But at the same time, just, you know, the usual reality of the Red Bull is that good, Max Verstappen is that good, and let's not forget the Shanghai track has some very, very long straights. Well, one particularly incredibly long straight and other sort of standard lengthy ones elsewhere. So that, again, boosts Red Bull because we know how good that package is when it comes to aerodynamic efficiency.
Is there anything data-wise that the teams can bring from 2019? It's such a long time ago, as Phil was saying. I mean, Lewis Hamilton won that Grand Prix with Valtteri Bottas in second place. So cast your mind back for how long ago that was. It seems like an absolute age, doesn't it?
Yeah, last time we were there, Max had won like five races. So that tells you everything, right? Yeah, there will be some data. Obviously, the track is still the same, so the layout hasn't changed. The aerodynamic needs haven't changed. So obviously, these teams are brilliant. They can do a lot of preparing, but they'll just have more unknowns to deal with than they normally do, and they'll have less time in FP1 to sort it out.
It's more, you know, it's more a question mark about the track surface because nothing's happened on it since 2019 to the point that it lost its FIA grading, whatever the top grading is for hosting F1. So yeah, that's definitely gonna add to the tire questions because F1 teams, while they're very, very clever and very sophisticated, the little changes really can make a big difference to what various teams still call the dark art, the pseudoscience of getting the best out of the tires. So that more than the sprint weekend, I think, will be a factor in whether something different happens.
Yeah, and if you look at the, especially the last sector, so you've got that massive 1 kilometer straight, then you've got a hairpin, you've got another straight, a very sudden left-hander, and another straight. So as you said, front graining is going to be quite a, you know, quite a big issue, because that's just 2 kilometers of the track where the tires just aren't getting a proper lateral load. So by the time you get to that fearsome turn one to turn two carousel, your tires are not going to be in the window. So there's massive potential for people just shredding their tires there and just ruining their stints because of it.
I don't know what all the fuss is about. I was brilliant around China in Formula One 2017. I was great on that game. Talking about sprint races there, Alex, and the impact it's going to have. I mean, as we said, certain drivers have been quite vocal about how it's not the greatest decision that you got the sprint race so early in the season at a circuit, more so that they haven't been out for so many years. What do you think the impact is going to be when you look at one practice session before Parc Fermé conditions kick in?
Well, I think I've nailed my colours fairly close to the mast earlier. In theory, there's the potential for change, but you know, you can never guarantee it. But with the changes that have been made to the sprint race, and also just thinking about the hosting it at different events, for instance, this one coming back, F1 likes to pick tracks where it's going to get action on the sprint race weekends, and the Chinese Grand Prix historically does generate that. Like the layout is just, it leans towards drivers having a go. Think of that hairpin at the end of the first sector early on in the lap, the big long straight. Just how many races throughout its history have there been moves like Vettel and Verstappen getting together, or I think it was the other way around, Verstappen into Vettel with the hairpin. You know, this is just a track where things do happen, and hence why that's a key reason in why F1 picked this to be amongst the sprint allocation. But yeah, it's different again. I'm sick of the sprint race format changing. I still don't think they should award points for it when it's not at every round. And it's different in the fact that Parc Fermé now basically resets after the sprint race and ahead of Grand Prix qualifying. So you've got sprint qualifying Friday evening, sprint race Saturday morning, and then Parc Fermé resets for Grand Prix qualifying and the main race. Now, whatever jeopardy F1's always hoping for with a sprint weekend, that it will catch out the teams because there's only 1 hour of practice, is effectively removed. So even if Red Bull have got things completely wrong on day one, they can undo everything on day two, in theory, you know, everything. I'm talking in relative terms, right? So I don't like that. And then talking about the, you know, the driver complaints, the Carlos Sainz's complaints in particular, coming out of the Japanese Grand Prix, it's all about what caught Ferrari and Mercedes and potentially others, although all the cars weren't checked, at the US Grand Prix last year, which is that on tracks that do have bumps, when it's a sprint weekend, if the teams get their calculations wrong on ride heights, they can be illegal because they're running too low and wearing their planks too much. So that's something that Ferrari and obviously Via Science in particular is quite concerned about. But again, if it can see what's going on through the sprint race, in theory, it should be able to adjust its setup to avoid that risk for the main race.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. Like, I know being able to reset your car setup changes a lot and remove some of the jeopardy, but it, you know, it does mean that teams give I know that removing the Parc Fermé does sort of eliminate the jeopardy a little bit if you allow teams to reset their setup basically, but it does give them a fair chance to have a look at the data and see what's going on with things like a plank wear. And you know, we're talking about, you know, lots of very clever engineers and mechanics, and we're basically not, you know, not letting them do their jobs if you lock it in after FP1 and then don't touch it for the rest of the weekend. So yeah, there will be some jeopardy that's removed, which is maybe a little bit annoying, but then on the other hand, day two does start with qualifying straight away, so it's not like you have another hour to dial in your setup changes. You'll have to be sure about what you're doing.
So Phil, we know pretty clearly, I think, that Alex isn't a fan of it. But are you a fan of this new format, or are you waiting to decide come Saturday morning?
I think it's always sensible to wait and see what happens and then cast your judgment. I'm not a huge sprint race fan either. I'm not as vociferously against it as Alex is, but you know, I'd like to wait and see and give it a fair chance before judging.
Oh, Alex, it's like he's telling you off, isn't it? You don't care, do you? You don't care, do you?
Not at all. Honestly, if Silverstone 21 and Monza 21 didn't make me love sprint races, nothing will. It also, you know, from a purely selfish point of view, makes our weekends a lot harder. So there's that element at play for me as well. But yeah, obviously that won't mean anything and shouldn't mean anything to the listeners. But yeah, it's fine. I get why F1 does it. A sprint race brings in more viewers than a practice session. I get the business logic, but still nothing I don't think will ever make me like it.
That's what we like, though, isn't it? We like to have different opinions. Different opinions are good. They're a good thing. We should embrace them. What about tyres, then? Phil, I'll go to you on this one. They're bringing the gods of tyres, Pirelli, that is, are bringing the mid-range, that's a C2, 3 and 4 for this weekend. How much of an impact is that tyre choice going to have on the first Chinese Grand Prix on 18-inch rims?
I'm not sure it's really about 18-inch rims so much, but it's just about, like we said, the graining. You need a compound that can handle these super demanding sections, especially turn 1, 2, 3, and then there's some high-speed twists in the second sector as well. So you can't go super soft and bring the C5. But then on the other hand, you know, if it is going to be quite cold and the tires are going to cool down on the straights a lot and then get you out of the window, then... Yeah, people that normally would want to do a long stint on the hard tires on the C2s in this case. So the second to hardest compound that Pirelli has available. Yeah, how good is that tire going to be? We know that some teams weren't a fan of the hards. Lewis Hamilton was particularly struggling in Japan. So yeah, it depends, but it's going to be really difficult for everybody to stay in the window for the entire race.
Alex, does that mean, going back to the sprint race format, does that mean that we're assuming that the sprint race, there'll be certain teams that use that as a tyre test?
I wouldn't have thought so, because there are points on offer for it. Maybe down the back of the grid, you in theory, you might want to sacrifice one car, but I don't see that F1 teams ever think that way. It's all about maximising what they've got in front of them. Yeah, I honestly don't know, Bryn, sorry.
That's all right. You don't have to know. We're going to wait and see, aren't we, for a few more days' time until it actually happens. As Phil was saying, wait and see what happens, how it all plays out. Now, we've said a few times that this is the first time back in China since 2019. Some really big races over the years. A lot of great memories. And I saw, there's actually not on Autosport, but on a different platform, a question put out to fans of their favourite Chinese Grand Prix memory, and there were so many harking back to 2006, Michael Schumacher's last ever win in Formula One, when he was in the Ferrari up against Alonso in his Renault, and they didn't have the different tyre choice back then, the Bridgestones and the Michelin as well. So what are both of your fondest memories of that Chinese Grand Prix over the decades, over the years that you've watched it? Let's go to you first, Alex.
I probably would pick that one, that 2006 Chinese Grand Prix, just purely because I adore, you know, massive Michael Schumacher and Ferrari fan when I was younger. And yeah, it was also a terrific race, sort of wet to dry thriller, a lot going on, and it set up the World Championship really nicely. Then was completely undone with what happened to Schumacher in Japan. But yeah, I think that would be my favourite. Although I also quite like the 2013 one. I think not his last win, but he certainly won that day. Just because it was like early Pirelli era tyre chaos on lots of overtaking. That was quite cool.
Yeah, I'll probably go for 2018 actually, when Daniel Ricciardo won. It was another interesting race where you've got split strategies and you had the Red Bulls pitting on their safety car, putting on softer, fresher tyres, and then vault up the order. Alex mentioned earlier, this was the race where Verstappen clattered into Vettel at the hairpin. And then Vettel was having a proper nightmare in the Ferrari. He was also being literally shoved off the track by Alonso in the McLaren. And then, yeah, Ricciardo really using those fresh tires and, you know, zipping through the field to win it. It was a brilliant drive from I think it was sixth at the time when he came out of the pit. So that was a very fun race.
certainly some decent memories. And I've just done a bit of digging for you, Alex, because I know there'll be people hitting the keyboards if we don't do this. Yeah, you are. He definitely did win. His last win was two races after that, the Spanish Grand Prix, Alonso. But yeah, it's I just put in the just letting everybody know that we do check these facts and stuff like that. And Alex was right. He said he wasn't quite convinced he had the right answer, but it was a decent one. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the 2006 one does stand out for a lot of people for a lot of reasons, and I think quite rightly so. Having two different tire manufacturers back then certainly changed things up a little bit. But let's have a look again ahead of us at what's going to hit the track. It's high speed, medium speed corners. You've both been talking about that. Does that mean, both of you, that it's likely to be another runaway win for Red Bull, Alex?
Well, I think ideally, as we've covered, everything about this layout and the time of year and the conditions hopefully brings Ferrari into play. It's just, as I'm always saying, you can't discount Red Bull because of how good it is and how much better the RB20 is than every other car. What we do know is that there are teams, McLaren, that are basically saying, this track is the worst one we've been to so far for our car type, because there's actually a lot of slow speed corners and a lot of long corners, or, you know, and with long corners, you can't maximize the top speed of the car. So yeah, that, I mean, again, McLaren was saying that. Well, they were certainly saying plenty of times last year, this track won't suit our car, and they did terrifically well. But considering everything we know about what they have and haven't done with that package, China will certainly be a struggle for them. But yeah, basically, we hope Ferrari are going to be in the game. Mercedes should be better if it's not going to be boiling hot, which they've said is their key weak point. A lot of work done on that in Japan. But yeah, the thing is it could be. Like, honestly, Max Verstappen probably could have won the Australia. In fact, I think he would have won the Australian Grand Prix were it not for his brake fire. I don't believe that Ferrari had enough of an advantage to comprehensively defeat the best driver in the category in the best car on tyre form. So yeah, I'm hoping it won't be a runaway, but I still think Red Bull are just that much better than the rest overall.
Yeah, I think Alex nailed it. I'm not going to bet against Red Bull. It's just not going to do it. But if you look at all the circumstances with the sprint race and sort of the graining that's expected and the temperatures and everything, if you put it all together, then there are enough elements why Ferrari could win or could be very close. And then, you know, who knows what happens. But yeah, am I going to bet against Red Bull? No, I'm not going to do that. Sad to disappoint you.
You two know far, far more than I do, that's for sure. So I'm gonna stick with you when I go down the bookies, that's for sure. On this race for upgrades or out-developing teams, are there any teams that are standing out as bringing major upgrades to China over the others?
There are a number of teams bringing small pieces, but I think the main upgrade packages are going to wait for Miami, and then especially like Imola, the first European race. That's sort of the main target for a lot of teams. But yeah, we've seen even in Australia, it's not easy to bring upgrades there. Some teams did it. Some more upgrades in Japan. So there are a lot of teams, even the smaller teams, really trying to bring small incremental upgrades. And it looks like it's not going to stop. They're going to keep bringing stuff like that. But yeah, the bigger upgrade packages, I think we'll have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, you wouldn't bring a big upgrade package for a sprint weekend. I know McLaren did it at Austria last year, but obviously that's a European track where it's easy to get things into and it will go well. So I think, yeah, it's very unlikely.
Yeah, obviously, famously, Alpine did it in Baku and that completely backfired, didn't it? They had an absolute disaster from FP1 onwards.
How unlike them.
Yeah, I know, right? But that was really just utter chaos. Because they just didn't have any time to get it right after they had an awful FP1. So yeah, that's sort of a cautionary tale against it. A lot of teams now feel confident enough that they can do it. You know, they're not exactly new to the sprint format anymore. So it's no longer like a faux pas to bring upgrades to a sprint, but it's still a risk.
Just on the upgrade thing, Phil, you wrote an article around McLaren and their hopes to outdevelop teams in a race for upgrades with Andrea Stella saying, talking about it really, saying he's going to hope that they'll win this one. What are your further thoughts on that one from the article you wrote?
I mean, it's really hard to say because obviously we don't know. We can only watch what they're doing. Well, once they're bringing stuff to the track. So Andrea Stelli is not a BS merchant, so he's not going to just say we think we'll be able to outdevelop them without seeing some promising things on the data in the factory. So they do feel confident that they can do it, that they can at least keep up with Ferrari and potentially beat them. But it's impossible to judge. Obviously, they showed last year how good they can develop a car throughout the season. So that's another sort of argument for them. But we'll see. I mean, Ferrari's has done a remarkable job transforming their race base. So it's not like they haven't developed as well. So it'll be tight between the two of them for a long time, I think.
And a real incentive, isn't there, for a race for third in the constructors this year between two, potentially three different teams. I think that Ferrari look like they might be nailed on for second in the constructors already, don't they? But finally, almost finally, we are almost going to wrap this up in a second, but final thoughts about China. You both are looking forward to it, I think, in slightly different ways. Alex more for the Grand Prix on the Sunday than maybe the sprint on the Saturday. But, you know, generally it's nice, or genuinely it's nice, to go back to China.
Layout-wise, and the fact that it generally has produced interesting races in the past, yes.
Phil?
Yeah, same. I'm cautiously optimistic for a decent race. I don't know, man.
Do you know, you could leave it there. I mean, that sounds... Yeah. I think we could probably take that answer from every single Grand Prix for certainly last season and maybe for the rest of 2024 as well. I'm optimistic for a decent race. Bonus question for you both. You know, I normally throw a curveball in about you predicting a position. I never go for 1, 2, 3. So tell me, who's going to... see on the script here. Who's going to finish fifth? Who
Felipe
cares?
Massa.
Who's going to finish... Felipe Massa. Who's going to finish fifth, Phil?
Oh, the proper questions.
we've been waiting for this one for ages.
I'm just going to go crazy and say Yuki Tsunoda.
Okay, Alex is nodding.
I'm just going to live as I always do, so relentlessly in the real world. Fifth, well, let's say it's Red Bull 1-2, Ferrari 3-4. That makes it, and McLaren we know is not going to be there, or we think is not going to be there. So it's got to be a Mercedes. Based on 2020 form so far, it's got to be George Russell, right?
I thought you were going to say Hamilton. I thought you were going to...
That'd be too easy.
Gents, thank you very much indeed. We shall catch up on Sunday post the Grand Prix itself, and maybe even before. But that about covers it. The news heading into Formula One's return to China this weekend. Don't forget to set those alarm clocks nice and early if you're in Europe, not just for the Grand Prix, but also for the sprint race on Saturday morning. Be sure to check back on Sunday for our full review of the race, but don't forget that this week we'll also have the finales of our Driven to Succeed and BTCC Top 10 series. So be sure to hit the follow button and keep up to date with all of our content. Until then, though, thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.